This is Jimmy IV, creator and host of the Sexy Cool Lounge podcast. And I want you to continue to shine bright and radiate your vibe because you're now listening to The Road to Rediscovery with Aubrey Johnson.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. As a quick reminder, you can get this show anywhere you listen to your podcasts. If you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts, we invite you to leave us a rate and review. Otherwise, we invite your feedback by email. Simply send us an email to roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. And we'll even give you a shout out in a future episode. My special guest is a former prison teacher from Charlotte, North Carolina. Just this past April, he released his book, Lifeline to a Soul. This book chronicles the years he spent as an entrepreneurship teacher in a minimum security prison. He now works with Lifeline Education Connection, and we're going to be digging into all sorts of good stuff in this conversation, no doubt. So get your tuning ears on. Let's welcome John McLaughlin to the show, as well as Lifeline Education Connection founder, Tavares James, to the show. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. It is an honor. Thank you.
No, absolutely. It's a pleasure and an honor having both of you on for sure. So, John, let's go ahead and start with you first, sir. Give us a glimpse into your journey in teaching, and what led or inspired you to teach in prison.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Aubrey, I'm a big fan of your show. It's very inspirational. So being on tonight's a big night for me, and thank you.
Thank you.
My story starts a while back. It actually starts with my father, who never went to college, graduated high school, and started working at a factory that made metal storage products. And he was a welder of shop desks. And from there, in a 25-year span, he worked his way up to national sales manager. So very motivated guy, hardworking guy. The company did very well until in the mid 80s, they had some corporate raiders, which was common back then, who saw the balance sheet, saw some assets there, took control of the company and did everything they could to lower the share price. It's a publicly held company. So they're trying to buy it cheap so that they can take the goods and split it all up, you know, basically stealing. And my dad stood by and watched him take his company apart that he had built for, you know, 6 months to a year until finally there was no place for him. And he said, that's it. I will never work for anybody else again. I'm going to start my own thing. And he went out, started with very, very little, almost nothing, in the same industry with the same customers. And at this time, I was getting out of college, my undergraduate. And he said, why don't you come work for me? And I said, nah, this is too risky. To work for a startup, I'm going to invest a lot of time and energy. This could be a really bad move for me. So I told him, I said, Dad, I'll give you 2 years because I knew I could learn from him. But then I'm going to go somewhere safe. And what I learned over that 2 year period, I learned a tremendous amount from him, but also that controlling your own destiny is where you want to be. The big risk in all this, in work, in business, is putting your fate in someone else's hand. He learned it the hard way over a 25 year period. He never said it to me, but I started understanding that, well, if I do my own thing, well, then I can have a, you know, I can pivot when I need to, and I'm in control of this. He took a slower, smaller interest in the business. And then I started it, made numerous mistakes. I wanted to quit 3 or 4 times to points when I thought there was no way we could make it through another day. But every time I wanted to quit, I was lucky enough to have somebody there by me who talked me out of it. It wasn't me that I'm this amazing, determined. No, no. When things get bad, I'm ready to bail. But I always had the right person and they always convinced me to stay. And what I learned through that was if you want something in this world, you just keep going after it until you get it. The day you say I quit is the day you can no longer get to where you want to be. So 20 years of running a business, and it got to where, despite all the early challenges, which I think everybody faces in a startup, the company started doing very well to the point where I could turn it over to other people that I trusted. I had some free time. Mm-hmm. And I decided, I guess I should say this. I went back to school to get an MBA because I was getting completely outdated with how business was done.
Yes.
That gave me the qualifications to teach in a community college setting. Mm-hmm. And I got it in my head that I wanted to teach entrepreneurship, because I think the best way to learn it is from somebody who's made the mistakes.
Right.
Maybe not from a book, a video, but I can sit down there and you can tell me your plan and I can say, don't do this, do this. I've been down that road, you know, mm-hmm. be careful here. And I got it in my head, and I had been through so many times when I learned not to quit that I just said, I'm going to do this either until I get too old to do it or somebody hires me.
Right, right.
And I spent 7 years. Right, that's it. I'm never going to quit. I learned that early on. It took me 7 years to get a job interview to teach.
Wow.
And the only job I could get, I wasn't going to quit. And the interview I got was to teach entrepreneurship in a minimum security prison. And mm-hmm. I think maybe God was in charge of this, because I wouldn't have taken the job if I didn't think I had any other option.
Right.
I didn't want to teach in a prison. I'm not the kind of guy comfortable in a prison. I had never been in a prison. It seemed scary to me. The guys looked mm-hmm. really scary, dangerous people. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't going to turn it down, because this is it. This is it or nothing. So
right.
I walk in not knowing what I'm getting. Right? Mm-hmm. No mm-hmm. idea. It's all eye-opening wow. stuff, crazy stuff.
Sure.
And what I learned was, there's a lot of really quality people that are incarcerated that just mm-hmm. need a little help, a little guidance. Mm-hmm. And luckily, they didn't give me anything to work with. So I had all this time to build my own class the way I wanted it, which is what I'm used to.
Right, right.
And I learned that if I focus on entrepreneurship, we've got some people getting out with felonies who are going to have trouble finding a job. But they can start a business. And if you can mm-hmm. provide value to me, well, I'm not going to ask you background. I don't care. It's not
right.
It would be unusual for me to ask you if you're working for me, not as an employee, but as an independent contractor, mm-hmm. your background. So that gives you an advantage. Mm-hmm. And also, I learned that the people in there need a lot of help with financial literacy. They just had never been taught the basic money management skills. And when right. you look at the statistics, most people are in prison because they were making money the wrong way. They don't right. understand.
Yes.
So it yes. was fascinating to me how eager these people were for the information, and how there was no other resource for them to find any. There's no cell phones. There's no internet. How are you supposed to learn anything in there? It's very, very difficult.
Right.
Then I lost the job, which, if you read the book, unexpectedly, and COVID hit, and I said, well, I can't teach anymore, and I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed getting in and helping those guys. But maybe by writing this book, I can change some people's perspectives of how they view incarcerated people, you know, because the system dehumanizes them, makes them all look the same. Yes. But when you walk in and get to know names and faces, these right. people are just like me and you. They maybe right. had a bad night. They maybe had a bad role model. But there's no difference there for the majority of them. And they want help.
Right.
They just have no way to get it. And it's a right. waste. It's a waste of human potential. So the book's goal is to not so much sell books, but to take somebody inside the fence with me and say, here's what I, as a naive guy, never been, but here's what I found and here's what I learned. And mm-hmm. I thought, well, maybe I could do some good with that. So then I meet Tavares through a friend of a friend. And he says, you know what I want to do? I want to start an education company to help people who have faced obstacles in their life. And I said, you got to be kidding me. I've been doing that for 3 years now and I don't have a job anymore, but I got some great material. Let's talk this over. Let's get together. And so he has taken me on as a volunteer, which is a tremendous honor. He's an amazing person. And that's kind of how I got to where I am today. So
wonderful. Wonderful. No. And thank you for sharing that journey with us for sure. That is hugely important. It's setting the foundation. And Tavares, I'm going to hand the torch over to you. John alluded to how you met. Okay. If you can just give us a glimpse into your journey and what inspired you to want to pursue this and helping people who are just wrongfully perceived, you know, in a negative way, help them and by giving them the tools for, you know, business ownership, entrepreneurship, and financial education.
Wow. First of all, thank you, Aubrey, for allowing us to be on this wonderful, wonderful podcast. Now get your shovels, folks, because we're about to dig deep, right? So the way it started for me was I had, you know, had a pretty good come up, pretty good household, Virginia Beach, Virginia. And then domestic violence started to play a factor in our life, right? And so we moved from Virginia Beach to living about 9 deep in a house with my aunt. And we went from basically living close by the beach to living in the hood, right? Yeah. And so we went from what was considered for me was a culture shock, right? Yeah. And I started to adopt some of the ideas and some of the ideologies in the noun or the people, places, things, and ideas that were around me. And of course, what happened? The result was I started getting in trouble.
Yeah.
And I was a good student. I did well in school, but I couldn't seem to shake the lifestyle that I was pursuing. And as a result, I went to prison, right? Mm-hmm. So I went to prison and I went through that experience of prison. And what I realized was that the people that were in there, myself included, weren't really so much bad people in a sense, but we made bad choices.
Right.
And the choices that we made would result or would be detrimental to our future if we weren't able to capture and take hold of it right then and there.
That's right.
So I moved forward and I went back to college and I did some other things in Virginia, went back to Virginia actually and did some other things there, came here, fast forward. And that was my journey. My journey was a journey of pain, right? Mm-hmm. Because they say it's been told to me when the pain of remaining the same becomes greater than the pain to change, that person will change.
Oh yeah.
Right. So what ended up happening for me in my life is that I had got enough pain of being the same. And I said, well, what way could I give back? Because I believe everybody has the same purpose in life. And that's to help other people. We just got to figure out what capacity can we help other people. Yes. The fireman figured it out. The man doing the podcast figured it out. The doctor figured it out. The lawyer figured it out. Well, how can I take and transfer or do the transformation or that paradigm shift of what I was living into what I can give to the world? Because remember, the arm does two things. It's meant out to give, to give, and it's also out to receive. The fortunate thing for me was I was doing too much of this. Give me, give me, give me, and not enough giving. And so moving forward, I had a friend of mine introduced me, and I started working for John. I actually was working for his company. Mm-hmm. And I worked for that company for a while, went into the sales aspect of the company, right? And this was my opportunity. And me and John were talking one day and I was telling him about some different things I wanted to do as far as helping people. Right. Yeah. Because now I'm considered what is considered a value service specialist. My life is consistent now of bringing value to people's life. Yes. And what better way to do it than to do it through a program? Right. So we see all these programs out here for everybody. And let's keep something in mind, too. Prison is not just for the edifice, the building. Prison is for the mind, the spirit, and the physicality of an individual. Because we have people in mental prisons, we have people in spiritual prisons, and we have people in physical prisons. And so my job coming out was not necessarily just directed towards inmates, but it was directed towards our formerly incarcerated individuals. But it's for anybody. That's single moms, homeless, veterans, anybody that's going through any struggles in their life. We are out here to lend that helping hand and allow them that opportunity, those obstacles that they face. Guess what? We can still pursue our dreams, goals, and aspirations via personal development and entrepreneurship. And so that's where me and John came up with this concept. And it was a very simple concept. You know, people are oftentimes, we live in a gig economy today. And then if we live in a gig economy, there's something for everybody to do, right? But how can we direct it? Because you got to remember, anybody that went to prison, was on drugs and alcohol, has been through any obstacle, they're probably a risk taker.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We just need to transform that same risk taking they did for whatever they were doing previously. And we're helping them transform that into something positive. And I think that is the way I look at life today, because I have to remember I have more time behind me than I have in front of me. So I don't have a lot of time to to continue to be around the same nouns, the people, places, things, and ideas that I was before, and to kind of move in a different direction. That's what this program started for. And it started to help individuals.
Yes, sir. Gotcha. That's wonderful, man. And I love what you mentioned about, giving, having a heart for service, right? And being genuine about it, wanting to give back. There's two things that kind of resonated with me as you were saying that, Tavares. One is a quote from Muhammad Ali a long time ago. He said, "Service to others is the rent we pay for while on this earth." Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, in my heart of hearts, I truly, truly believe that God has wired us all inherently for two things. Number one, for connection, right?
Yes.
For connection, to interact with people, to talk. No one person is an island and can live and survive on their own. And then number two is to give.
Right? Yes.
Is to give.
Yeah.
And like you said, that arm can give and it can receive, right? And so there's a tremendous amount of self-awareness that must be, that is required in order to just be cognizant of, hey, am I receiving too much? I need to maybe give a little bit more. I think John hopped off. We're going to add him on. There we go. We got Mr. McLaughlin back on there. Look who's back. Look who's back.
I just was gone.
Yes.
So, John, what do you think of that? I'm just kidding. we asked you a question when you were off, and when you came back on, I just says, "Oh, so what do you think of that?" I'm just teasing. But check this out. This is what I want to know, okay? Because I am very curious, genuinely curious, about how this type of learning was initially received, okay, by prison inmates when introduced to them, okay? Because you have people there from all walks of life, okay? And some have just gotten in, some have been there 10, 20, 30 years. And to some degree, and I'm just assuming here, I can't help but think that there's some degree of jadedness among some, not all, but among some. And some of that jadedness may be based on how they're treated by correction officers, or how they're treated by guards, how they feel society portrays them, and thinks of them. That could be some jadedness. And then it's like, oh, this guy's coming in thinks he can teach us, blah, blah, blah. It's not going to do any good. I guess my question is, what was the initial, how was it received initially when introducing, this type of teaching in that setting? And that's for either of you. But if I could start with John and giving his take on it, and then we'll move to Tavares.
And it's a great, great question. It really is. So when I start my first class, I had this puzzle I wanted to bring in, and we were going to do that. It was going to be a way to connect everybody. They confiscated it at the gate. They wouldn't let me bring it. First day, I walk in, and my big start is taken away. So I said, from the heart, I said, look, I got to tell you guys something. I've never taught a class before, and I've never been in a prison before. So we got 11 weeks together, and I'm going to learn a lot more from you than you could possibly learn from me. And then they're looking at each other like, no teacher says that. And honestly, it was stone-faced. I was that way the whole time. Stone-faced people for 2 or 3 weeks. Wouldn't respond, wouldn't listen, wouldn't do anything. But then eventually, I think I kind of got the rep where this guy doesn't have any ulterior motives. He's trying to help. But it took a while. You're absolutely right. But you know what's funny? I learned also about prison. Word travels so fast inside a prison. You've never seen anything like it. It's incredible. Really? And once somebody says, hey, I think he's okay, it gets around quick. So all of a sudden, maybe week 3 or 4, I figured a way to put slides up in the day room. I wasn't supposed to, and I've had a way to show videos, and I'm bringing in motivational stuff, and I'm knowing everybody's name, and I'm getting them interactive. And then all of a sudden, I was okay. Yeah. And it happened, like you said, all at once, when it was like an acceptance of he's really here to help. He doesn't have an ulterior motive. He's not here for the money. He's here to help. Yeah, so that took, I would say, 3 or 4 weeks. But when it happened almost overnight. So it was fascinating. I mean, the things I learned about how prisons operate.
Yeah. Just,
there's no place like them, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's fascinating. Tavares, what's your take on that?
So when somebody comes in new inside a facility, right? So the first thing most of the people that are in there are thinking is, how can I get out of being in the dorm? Or how can I get out of being in my cell all day long? And so they have a sign up sheet. And a lot of times they'll sign up, or the programmer might say, hey, we got a program start. Sign me up, right? Because sign me up just means I'm just trying to stay busy, right? Because you got to remember, the thing that people have the most in there is time. Right. So people in prison get to do things people in the world don't really have a chance to get down and do all the time. And that's sit down and think. So there's a lot of sitting down to think. So when a class comes up and it gets you out of yourself, it gives you a chance to move around, or move around the yard and actually do something, people will sign up. Now, when they get there, they might say, oh, what's this class? Mm-hmm. Oh, the teacher don't know what they're talking about. Oh, this and that. Right. Because what happens is that the ego sets in, right? The easing God out, right? So that sets in. So then, like John said, when somebody realizes that somebody's really here to genuinely help you and they're not a threat to you, because you got to remember, people are on guard in prison.
Oh,
right? Everybody's on guard all the time. Yeah. Everybody's on guard for different situations. And so when somebody comes in who's genuine, like John comes in and he's coming to give back, it takes takes people a little bit. But once they start seeing, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about, this guy is legit, right? Because some people come in, some teachers, I've had teachers come in there that are just reading out of a book, and then somebody asked them and said, do you even, I remember taking a small business class, and it was a lady that came in there, you know, bless her heart. She came in there, and she was just reading out of a book that was like a 1992 book. And so somebody asked in the class, he said, ma'am, have you ever even owned a business? She's like, no, I haven't. I'm just kind of taking the class. It's my part-time job. So it was like, what happens is we got to remember that there are a lot of books in prison. I probably read over 700 books, right? Inside of there, right? Because what you get, you know, that's how your time consists of, you know, reading, working out, eating, going to sleep, getting on the phone, you know, the same normal routine every day, right?
Yeah.
And so when somebody comes and they're bringing some information, especially if you're on your way out the door, right? So when you've got a year left, a year and a half, it's some people who are incarcerated who have figured it out, said, I don't want to do this ever again. What tools do I need to take in so that I can take out of here, apply these tools and apply it to my life and live a better life? And so whatever class that need to do it in entrepreneurship, listen, the drug dealer was an entrepreneur. He was just a different type of entrepreneur, right? The person who was a fencer or whatever they did, everybody had the entrepreneur spirit that it was about people doing things in the wrong way, right? Yeah. And now it's somebody coming in and being able to teach that, man, the reception is phenomenal when it's applied. I got to just put that disclaimer out there. When it's applied,
right,
it definitely works.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. No, it does definitely work, you know. And one thing you mentioned, again, resonates with me, okay, credibility. You have to earn and build the credibility in knowing what you're talking about, in getting the respect and getting the admiration of, you know, the audience of the, you know, of the people there, by being genuine, being authentic, being true to who you are, not having some ulterior motive, right?
Yes.
And you want to connect. You want to connect with them, you know, with the audience, the people, no matter who they are. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, and you know, that's hugely important. And one thing both of you touched on that I really, really like, and when you come to think of it, you know, drug dealers, you know, other types of, let's say, you know, guys who may, I don't know, knock off an appliance truck and then sell the appliances, you know, there's an entrepreneurial spirit. It may not be in the right way expressed, you know, and there's a degree of risk taking there, which is also a prerequisite, I think, when it comes to taking that entrepreneurial path, right?
Definitely.
All right. So the mindset of an entrepreneur and someone who wants to be in business for themselves seems to be initially there among, you know, many of them, but there is two dynamics, I think, and I'd love to hear both of your takes on it. There's two dynamics. The first dynamic is the entrepreneur areas in which they explored that may have gotten them where they were or are. There's a degree of instant gratification, it seems like, okay, where it's a quick turnaround. You know, small effort to get a big return, right? Whereas what you're teaching them, you know, this is a marathon, not a race, okay? Yes. You're not going to become a millionaire overnight by doing it this way. But if you stick with it, right, you know, that's a shift. That's a mindset shift for that individual, I would imagine, right? Mm-hmm. That's the first dynamic. The second dynamic, I believe, is let's say sales, okay? Someone who takes a class in sales, let's say they went to high school, went to college, graduated from college. Now they are new in a company selling something. Well, you know what? They're going to get told no a lot. They're going to have the door slammed in their face a lot, right? And so there's a mindset that they have to kind of learn, you know, to persevere and go through that, right? Now, let's take someone who has been incarcerated and for 10 years, and now they're going through this program. They're learning how to become entrepreneurs. They're learning sales. They're learning marketing, and they're paroled. They have their own business, and they're told no a lot, and they're also having the doors slammed in their face. Who knows if it's because they're just the customer or prospect is just not interested, or is it because they were an ex-con or whatever? You know, we'll never know. We'll never know. But is there an added dynamic that has to be conveyed to these individuals as part of the instruction and the training in how to interact or be or receive rejection from the public?
John, go ahead.
Both great questions. Good, good over that he loves it. And it's perfect. When I started my class, I listed on a board, we had a whiteboard, here's the top 10 reasons why businesses fail, small businesses fail. And the failure rate's astronomical.
Yes.
Half don't make
yes.
it through the first year, 70%, you know, don't make it 5 years, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I would go and eliminate every one of them until the last one was, are you willing to work harder than you've ever worked in your life? And I was like, if you can't go there with, I can help you with the rest, but I can't help you with that. And this right. is going to be a long, long, you're probably going to make some fatal mistakes. You're probably going to have to go out of business and start over. You're probably yeah. going to have to work weekends, nights. It's going to be the hardest thing you ever did. And the first mm-hmm. years, you're not going to make any money. Mm-hmm. Be ready for that. And if you can't do that, then go work for somebody else, because this is what it's going to take. And I've never known right. anybody that it was easy or quick. It's just not, you know, it takes a long time to figure out what you're. So that's the perfect thing. It's not quick and easy. But if you've seen it quick and easy, albeit illegal, then it is kind of hard to shift that mindset. Yeah. You know, I always tell people, my dad was a locker salesman. And he would come mm-hmm. home after work and say all these great things his salesman did. He managed them. So I wanted to be a locker salesman, too, so he would think I was good, too, you know. But now if my dad mm-hmm. was selling cocaine, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to be right in there with him going for the quick block. So a lot of it is the role model too, but you do need to change that mindset and say, this won't be easy. It'll be the hardest thing you ever did, and you're very likely to fail.
Yes.
Sales question. For me, I mean, rejection is such a huge part of selling. I have when I made a logo for my class, 3 points. Number one in gold is sales. If you can't sell, you won't succeed. You have to That's convince right. people that what I have is going to bring value into your life. And if you can't communicate that message well, doesn't matter how good it is. Nobody's mm-hmm. going to buy it. So mm-hmm. being able to sell is more important than anything else. And if you can't do it, you need to find somebody who can do it. And how do you handle rejection? You just get out there and keep getting rejected. I mean, and be prepared for it. And if you start taking it personally, you're pretty much doomed, because it's never personal, but it feels personal. It's really hard to cross that bridge. I started out as a rookie salesman cold calling. And, you know, there was days when every door slamming in your face and you're just done for the day.
Yeah.
And I would tell them that if you're not willing to knock on that next door with a smile on your face and a positive, don't go. You're going to shoot yourself in the foot. But both are very, very valid points. And probably the most difficult part of transitioning somebody from there to a small business owner are exactly what you said. So perfect questions.
Yeah.
So
gotcha.
Yeah. Tavares.
It's time, gentlemen. So the good part, so the thing about it is that for me, I identify. So I don't want to hear no excuses. Right. I identify with the struggle. Yes. People struggle because there is no instruction. Where there is no instruction, there needs to be an instructor. Right. So the first thing that I have to let people know ahead of time is this it's not the same game.
Right.
But in order to know the game, you have to know the rules to the game. Right. See, there are rules to the drug game. There are rules to the I guess knocking off the Washington Drive truck, right? There's rules to the game. You can't play Monopoly with Twister's rules, can you?
No.
Right?
No.
Right? So you have to know the rules of the game, and the rules of the game are three simple rules: persistency, consistency, and patience. Right? Gotcha. People are going to tell you no, but guess what? You're not going back to prison. If somebody tells you no about a product or service that you have, it might not be about you. Don't take it so personal, because people do business with people they know, they like, and they trust. So people may like your product, but they might not trust you, right? And it may have something to do with your background, or it may not. It doesn't matter. What really matters is that you know that next no is leading you to your yes.
It sure
right?
is. 100%.
So for an individual who's coming out of incarceration, the first thing I tell them is what you learned before, some of the taxes you used before, you're going to have to make this mind shift. And this mind shift that you're going to have to make is the most life changing. And it's going to be the most life altering change you're going to have to make. And that's the ability to be human with people.
Right.
Because you have sometimes you have, you know, prison can turn a person to an animalistic level if they're not careful.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So you can't come out of a situation like prison and bring that same mentality outside in the world. You just can't do that. So what you have to do is you have to look at things in a perspective and say, OK, I want to, you know, a big thing is driving trucks. You know, got a lot of guys to get out of prison. They want to drive trucks. They want to start landscaping companies. They want to do construction, right? Because these are no barrier entry in industries. Like John said, if I'm coming to do some electrical work on your house and Miss Mary down the road has already told you I've done a good job, you listen to Miss Mary. You ain't worried about me. You worried about the fact that can this guy do the job efficiently, quickly, get the job done, and my electricity works and my lights cut on.
Right.
So with that said in mind, so when we talk about going to the second part of it, so first part of it is the dimension of basically allowing people to understand that you're going to get rejected, but you ain't going back to prison. It's simple, right? It's simple. You might get rejected 20, 30, 40, 50 times, but just know that's leading you to your yes. You haven't been convincing enough, right? So to put something from your hand to somebody else, it really wasn't that much convincing. Right. But now when you have to convince of selling a product or a service, you have to sell who you are today.
100%.
Right?
That's right.
And not a facade, not a mask, but you got to sell who you are, because you will eventually be found out. Right.
Yes.
So the thing about it is we live in an environment where people will Google you. Right. So just be honest. Right. So if somebody says, hey, man, I like your service, but hey, by the way, I looked you up, man. You want to tell me about this? And believe it or not, most people, if they have an understanding, if they're understanding of it, a lot of people would just say simply, man, hey, that was your past, man. I understand that, man. Get up on that ladder, man, and go ahead and knock that electrical work out if you need to, man.
Right, go and get that done.
I just let you know that, whatever.
Yeah.
And so that portion of it was important. But then you talk about sales. Sales is a mindset. Sales has got to be relentless. It's like Jeb Blunt got the book Fanatical Prospecting. You got to be relentless with this thing and know that no is not against you. It's not an attack against you. It's just you may have not given them the right information. You might not have led them enough. You might not have knew their points. Because one thing about people that have been incarcerated, they got a degree in sociology. We read people.
That's human. Right.
That's a degree in sociology. Without having a degree, we have a degree because you have to learn social skills. Excuse me. Pardon me. You know, you learn different skills and structures of learning groups of people and their environment. And you learn that in those environments. It's just about transferring that same information. So a lot of guys, I don't want to hear no excuses. Right. Anything you've been through, I've been through it. Right. Most of the things you guys have been through, I have been through it. Let's put the excuses on the shelf. Right. Because excuses only pacify those who make them. And let's get busy. Let's get in society. Let's be productive members. Right.
Yeah.
So there are four aspects of a community. There's home, there's health, there's purpose, and there's community. There's four aspects. So the home is when people first come home, they want food, clothing, and shelter. Get it. Then they want health. We talk about mental health because PTSD is very serious for guys and women that come out of prison. People have experiences in there, and they come out, and it's mental health stuff going on. But then there's purpose, and that's what me and John focus on. What is your purpose? Again, the purpose is the same as to help other people, right?
Right.
And so when we talk about sales, we're talking about actually moving them in a direction of being able to be of value to the community with their product or their service. It's very simple for most people, but a lot of people do struggle with it. And they struggle with it because a lot of people don't want to change. Right. Change is an inevitable thing. A lot of people just don't want to change.
So, yeah, change is hard. Change is hard. Definitely hard. And you know what? So what's so ironic about it, Tavares, is while change is so hard, it really is the only one constant that you can guarantee is going to happen, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Change is going to happen no matter what. We don't know what type of change, if it's for the better or for the worse, but change is going to happen. Tavares, you also brought up a very good point, an idea that when it comes to core skill, right? A core skill or a core experience. And here's what I mean. When I was young, my father told me once, he said, you know, for any teenager growing up, every teenager growing up should get a job and have exposure to the fast food business. Mm-hmm. If it's a year, if it's 2 years. And then I had a mentor of mine when I became a young adult and start working in corporate America. I had a mentor say, no matter what field you get in, everyone should have at least one experience in sales.
Yes.
Because you get to learn about people, know about people. You have to kind of earn trust of others to sell a product or to be convincing that this product will add value to you in your life. So I want to ask both of you, what is the one core experience that you think every human being should have at some point in their life that will benefit them moving forward in getting through this world?
What do you think, Washington? I mean, to me, you've got to see some bad times and see what you're made of. You've got to get to the point of almost quitting to realize that what you're quitting is something that's very valuable. And then when it comes back, then this is relationships or business or anything like that. You've got a whole new respect for it and a whole new feeling. But if it comes easy and it's easy the whole way, you take it for granted. To me, it's to the hard times are where the growth is.
Yes. You
know? And to me, to be down to your last dollar and be down to where you're sure you're going out of business or having strife at home, it gives you a whole new perspective on, do I really want to quit this? Do I really want to give up? And I learned, fortunately, that the value of not quitting is probably the best thing I've ever learned or experienced, was because everything I have in my life, I almost quit, and it's the best stuff I've ever had. But I always got to the point of, it got so rough that I almost gave up on it. So I think the more you experience that, the easier it becomes. You know, the struggle of getting to the quitting point and deciding I'm not quitting. I should maybe. Everything's telling me to quit, but I'm not doing it. I'm determined to push this through and make this work. To me, that's something that you carry forward, and you can do almost anything in this world if you don't quit. If you stay 100%. Focused on what you want and you don't quit, you'll get it. If you quit, you won't. And to me, that's what I've learned in my time here is the value of knowing what you want and just going after it, and nothing's going to get in my way. I'll have some obstacles, certainly, but I'm not going to give up on the prize. That's where I got to where I am, is just through that. And I was lucky that I learned it from other people.
Yeah, no, that's great insight, John. Thank you. Great insight. Tavares, how about you?
Mistakes. Stop trying perfectionism.
Right.
Think what happens is fear. Fear is the number one thing. This is the number one thing that disrupts a lot of people. My core thing would be to face your fears.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Some fears need to be faced head on. Mm-hmm. Some fears need to be faced by being vigilant. Some fears need to be faced by just walking away from them. Right. Yeah. But some fears need the most of the fears that we have. And when I say fear, see, fear is the father. Right. And but it's got kids. It's got worry. It's got doubt. It's got anxiety. It's got depression. It's got all these other things that stem from fear. And it's all part of the family.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the biggest thing is that people fear making mistakes. Make some mistakes along the way. If you want to own a landscaping company, you want to do landscaping, work for a landscaping company for a while, make some mistakes on the job, do some things there, then start your company, make some mistakes along the way, and still keep going because it's not necessarily the mistakes that you make, but it's the reaction to those mistakes that allow you to push through that next level. You look at any athlete that has soared great heights. You look at any business leader that has soared great heights. They've had to go through their mistakes, the struggles, the toil, the mud, the dirt, the people leaving them along the way, the fear of, I just lost everything. Should I go back and do this again? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So to me, it's that core value of knowing that regardless of the fact, we gotta face those fears because those fears are gonna be there regardless. And if a person tells me that they're not nervous or just get a little anxious about something new that they're about to do, I stay away from that person because to me that's not. I don't want to say because I used to work with this electrician one time and a guy got hit by you can get electrocuted, but he got shocked. And when he got shocked, he fell off and cracked his back. And the guy who cut the breaker on was a guy who thought he knew everything. And they say in the electrical world, any electrician who knows everything is the most dangerous electrician there can be because there's always something. Look, stop fearing what people think about you because you don't know something. If you don't know it, figure out how to learn it and then learn it to the best you can. Get a mentor, get mentorship, right? Because people fear somebody else telling them how to do things because some of us like to tell help how to help. Right. And so when we're not telling help how to help, help can actually help us along the way. So don't fear the mistakes. Let's go get it.
Love it. Love it. And that makes all kinds of sense. You know, the struggles, the mistakes, the obstacles, the barriers, all of those adversities. Right. As we say on the Road to Rediscovery, in our journey of life, those barriers and obstacles and struggles, they're not in the way. They are the way. You know, you have to go through them and respond to them to get on the other side. They are the way. They are the journey, right? And also on the Road to Rediscovery, we talk about four pillars to personal growth, right? Self-awareness, gratitude, humility, and service to others. And so, John, I wanted to ask you, can you explain for the listeners the importance and the significance that the role of self-awareness played in your experience in changing perspective prior between going into this job and coming out of the job?
Certainly. If you read the book, the very beginning of the book will tell you about my short career as a drug dealer. I got in with somebody that I trusted and it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And one night my big deal got thwarted because they had a meeting where I worked and said, we know there's drugs being sold here. And we know who's doing it. The cops are here. I'm 21 years old and I got, $500 to my name. It wasn't me. I didn't get caught. I somehow miraculously got away with that. I had forgotten all that. Until I got into prison and started teaching. And then I remembered all that, because I'm 55 in prison. I'd forgotten that part of my life. I wanted to forget that part of my life. That night scared me so bad. I retired. I never did it again. But as I'm looking around the room, I'm not seeing guys in the gray and green anymore. I'm seeing guys that should have been me in that position. And I can see myself going down that road, being where they are, not having all the breaks I had, not getting lucky like I got. I would be sitting in that chair and needing help because I had missed out on college. I had missed out on all this stuff, all the educational opportunities. And I would know that was now in a system that was dehumanizing me. And I'm thinking, boy, if that night had gone differently, I'm in prison at a young age, and I'm probably all this history, my life as it is now, is 100% different. I'm not
living
with my dad.
Yeah.
I'm not living in the house. I'm not married to that girl. I'm who knows? Because once you get in a part of that and you're not given any instruction or any help, you return. There's no way to feed your family when you get out because they haven't taught you anything except factory work, which doesn't pay enough to support a family. So what do? So I could see myself as them, as the 21-year-old kid who made a really bad mistake and wish she hadn't. But somebody needed to – that's why I named the book Lifeline. Somebody needed to throw him a lifeline and get him out of there. And Tavares finished the title for me. He said, because I said, it's lifeline something. He said, it's lifeline to a soul. You're throwing this to a soul. You're not throwing this to a prison number. You're throwing this to an individual, unique person. So I could identify. And once I did that, I wanted nothing more than to maybe pay back the penance for the grace that was bestowed on me just through sheer luck. So that was easy for me. And I walked out. Yeah. With a lot of close friends, I've got guys that work for me now that I met in there. I keep up with a lot of guys, and they're great friends, good people. You know, not what I thought when I walked in the door. When I walked in the door, I thought these guys are scary looking. They're scowling at me, tattoos and dreadlocks, and like there's going to be a fight any minute.
Yeah, yeah.
But we all make mistakes. Some people are punished more than others, and it's along the lines of you can do the statistics, color. Lack of income, lack of education, people in those demographics, when they do things that they're caught for, they're punished much more severely than white people from upper middle class. I mean, it's just the numbers aren't fair. So I was lucky in that I was born into a family that had some resources, and I was white. I mean, frankly. So, you know, there, but by the grace of God, go I. So,
it was
easy to relate.
No, I understand. I understand. And, again, with adversity, you know, we talk about it's going to happen to everyone, but how do you respond to it? Now, let's talk about grace. If you happen to be given grace, how do you respond to it? That's equally important, I think. And you made that vividly clear, John, in not only demonstrating self-awareness, okay, and understanding the position that you were in at 21, and then that you could have been in, but you also practice or demonstrated, in my view at least, humility, okay? Because anyone could have said, oh man, I got away with that. They had nothing on me, you know, and take that ego trip, take the ego route, saying, hey, you know, I must be good, you know, or very lucky, and then just go about their life, okay? Well, you wanted to give back for the penance of grace, you know, and that takes humility, that takes self-awareness to realize you could have been, you know, in that uniform at 21 for who knows how long, right? So that's incredibly huge. And then you started talking about the program, okay, and I want to pivot to the program now if we can. And Tavares, I want to ask this of you, sir. So Lifeline Education Connection, right?
Yes.
I took a look at the site and I was looking through some of the things. And you know what? I got to tell you, man, this is no life skills 101, okay? My background is talent development. And so I've also been an adjunct instructor, and I've also taught at life skills institutions, okay? Mm-hmm. This is no life skills 101. To me, it looks like a fully built course curriculum designed for entrepreneurship. I mean, everything from business owner mindset to marketing, sales, branding, and so forth. Just unpack that for us. You know, I mean, what is this fully built curriculum, you know, all about, and how does it benefit these people who wants to make a mark in their in this world?
So it's the R word. Aubrey, it's the all word, and it's relationships.
Yes.
The whole thing that we're teaching people, whether it's through sales, whether it's through marketing, whether it's through, the thing that I love, and John Tate is, I love power connecting, or what people call networking. Yes. I love power connecting with other people, because this is the way in which the way can be shown through other people. Right. See, that would say four eyes are better than two. So now you got nine eyes on something. So we teach a curriculum that is based on building relationships.
Yes.
This is where the power happens.
Yes.
We did a class on the 6 degrees of separation. And the 6 degrees of separation, you're six people away from Bill Gates. And you're six people away from whoever it is that you want to meet in your life. You're six people away. But it's about relationships. So we talk about sales. It's relationships. We talk about building relationship with the bank, right? We talk about bank relationships. So we bring U.S. banking. We correspond with U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank partnered with us to do presentations. So we do that. Why? Because people need to learn their love language, learn the bank's love language. Again, it's relationships.
Yes.
What we're teaching people is that no matter what we go through in our life, we're going to have to do it in groups.
Yes.
One person can't get it done. But 10 or 12, no 10 or 12, that no 10 or 12, that no 10 or 12. And when we combine those all together, oh, my God, watch out. Right. Because that is where the magic happens. So we teach a program that is a very strict program.
Yeah,
it's a very stringent program. And it's based on the several portions that we talk about. We talk about sales. We talk about marketing. We talk about advertising. We talk about personal credit, business credit. These are things that survive. These are not just when we talk about skip the business credit for a minute. Let's go to the personal side and just dealing with the personal part of our life, because a lot of us have left a wreckage in our past.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that fear kicks in and says, I don't really want to look at my credit report. You know, I know I got a 413 or 450 or 515. I really don't want to look at it. But what we do is we make you open that book again.
Yeah.
Right. We make you open that book of your life again so we can get that chapter closed and we can move on to the next chapter of your life.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. Stop staying stuck. Remember, I always say this is if you can start where you're at, you can always get to where you want to go. But we need to look at where you're at.
Right.
And so we start where people are at and we push sales. We push marketing. We're going to push banking relationships. We're going to push. What do you do with business credit? Listen, again, you cannot play the game if you don't know the rules.
Right.
And a lot of us for so long have been playing the game and not knowing that you were in the game. You were playing the game. You just didn't know the rules of the game, but you were in the game. And so the thing about it is that a lot of us weren't taught these things for whatever reason, maybe single household, whatever the reason may be. A lot of people weren't taught these things. But then when you show them how easy it is to actually start, let's work on building a personal credit. I got all these things on my stuff. I got bankruptcy. I got this. I got that. Guess what? Start where you're at.
Yeah.
Right. That's my thing. I don't care what you got. Start where you're at. And so we start people where they're at. We teach them the basics of sales.
Yeah.
How to interact with people. John has a phenomenal. We've got almost 300 hours worth of course material that we have put together and compiled so that people can't say they're missing something, because when you learn something with us, you become responsible for it.
Right.
That's how we teach. We teach responsibility and relationships. So once we teach it to you, now you're responsible for it. Right. And then you're responsible for sharing it with somebody else.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, Tavares. And another thing I feel that you teach as well is accountability. You mentioned it and alluded to it earlier, where, you know, some people don't want to take that hard look in the mirror and hold themselves accountable for where they are, the position that they're in. And you said it yourself, I don't care where you're at, but we need to look at where you're at so that we can build a plan to get to where you want to go, to get to where you want to be. John, you have anything to add to that?
Tavares has said it very well, but we kind of start with personal finance, because you got to be able to handle your own money before you can start a company, because the money handling it's not as important as sales, but it's way up there. If you can't save and save a little money back when you got to pay your payroll taxes and that kind of thing, you're going to hit a major barrier. So we've kind of got a process all laid out, and it's not just for people who want to start a business, although most do or are running a small business. But finance, handling money, learning how to sell, and networking probably are among the big pillars. But like Tavares will take anybody where they are, and he wants to know, what do you want to do? Do you want to buy a house? And did you want to start a business? What is it you're trying to do? And I will help you get there. And he's very, very good at it. It's a pleasure to work with him, because he takes an individual interest in everybody who reaches out. He's always done that. So.
Man, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's wonderful, and it gives people a sense of hope, right?
Yes.
Someone has enough confidence in me to put their time and energy into growing me. You know, some people just don't think that they're even worthy, you know, and when you demonstrate that to those people, then there is a sense of hope, not just a sense of hope for them to turn things around, but a sense of hope from a humanitarian standpoint that there are people in this world who care. And John Tavares, that's exactly what you two gentlemen are doing in this organization, Lifeline Education Connection. I mean, this is huge, you know, and I'd love for you to share for the listeners, how can they connect with you, learn more about your great work, and maybe even pick up a copy of your book?
Right. Well, everything is on the website, which is lifelinetoasoul.com. We've got our contact information there. If anybody is interested in a copy of the book, at the bottom of the page, there's a place to leave your email address. I'll be giving away 10 books in June. Next 10 people who mention your podcast, I'll be happy to send them an autographed book. We'll get Tavares to sign it. Love for you to have it. I'm not in this to sell books. I'm in this to change perspectives.
Yes.
And Tavares, if you contact him, I can promise you Tavares will call you back. He's very good at that. And the one common trait I think Tavares and I share is neither one of us think we're better than anybody. Would you agree with that, Tavares? You can't Definitely. Shock us with where you are. It's okay. We've been there. We've seen worse. Okay. We've done some things ourselves. We can help you. We're not going to look down on you, right? That's the one thing we share as a philosophy is we don't look down on anybody. We've all made mistakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we all, if you want to better yourself, we're standing by to do it. Anything you want to add, Tavares, to that?
Yeah, definitely. So anybody that wants to reach out again, you have the website, www.lifelinetoasoul.com. You can also email us. The email information is there, info@lifelineeducationconnection.com. That is there as well. Our phone numbers are there. You can call me. I'm pretty much available anytime. Obviously working hours, but I'm there for people. But let me just add this last thing that I remember. I said a lot of talent that I've seen in my life has been wasted inside of prisons and graveyards. And I just want to help people to understand that life is short. If COVID or nothing else we've been going through in this world have shown anybody, life is short. Mm-hmm. And if it's short, and if it's only temporary, then let's do the best that we can to be the best versions of ourselves. And because I tell you, the power of giving. I don't ask for nobody nothing back. I don't want nothing back. I want to see you succeed, because that in itself is the reward that I get. And I will never say I did that for him. I did that for her, because that way it takes away my blessings. It takes away my blessing. When I help somebody, I help them. And if they say something about Lifeline Education, you know, Connection, so be it. If they don't, so be it. Because guess what? I know what I'm doing, because I can look myself in the mirror today and I can look in that mirror and say, you know what? You did help somebody today.
That's right.
You know, let's help somebody tomorrow, because see, I can't get comfortable either, right? So let's help somebody else out tomorrow. So, with that said, man, anybody that's out there that really wants it, that really wants to change their life, or maybe just don't know how,
let's
do it. Let's get it.
Beautiful, gentlemen. I'm going to put the links to the book, the website, the email address, all of that in the episode show notes, so that the listeners can click. Connect with you, learn more about the great work you're doing while listening to this wonderful conversation. And gentlemen, I told you before we started this conversation, all right, time for the big question. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right, here's the big question. If you could summarize one key sentence, a thing or a virtue that you've learned from the other person, what would that be? John, what have you learned that's one key item from Tavares? Tavares, what have you learned that's one key virtue from John?
Wow.
Tavares has a unique gift of making people like him instantly. And it's a very powerful skill. But he's got energy, and he honestly... it's not an act. He's very, very sincere. Mm-hmm. He knows mm-hmm. the names of your children, your wife. He's asked everybody's doing. He genuinely, genuinely cares about people. I would say that about DeMars. It's not an act, but he comes on very powerful. He can make you smile every time you see him. I've never really seen him in a bad mood. He's just this incredible positive energy. And when I get around him, I feel good about myself. It's a gift that he has that I wish I had more of. But when we teach together, you see him in action. It's spellbinding sometimes to see how he interacts with people and how he communicates the message. It's incredible, but energy and positiveness and a genuine caring. It's a genuine caring for people that I've never seen it that strong in anybody, honestly.
Wow. The power of authenticity for sure. Yeah, beautiful. Absolutely. Tavares, how about you?
A humble giant.
Gotcha.
Humble giant. He's a humble giant. And I say giant because he has a mastery in sales that I just like take notes and mental notes and everything. And he has that mastery and he's very humble. And humility, you know, humility for me had to come after humiliations. I had to accept humility had to come after many humiliations.
Makes sense.
But in John, I see the humbleness, but I also see the passion and the drive and the conquering spirit that he has to where nothing's gonna stop him. Right. Like he's gonna do what he's gonna do, but he's gonna smile and do it the whole way. You'll see him, he's gonna smile just like this the whole way, wise.
Yeah.
Doing what he does because he's learned the power of humility. And that is what I really learned from him, man. He's a very humble guy, very humble.
That's very beautiful. Humble. That's beautiful. And you know what? As short as this conversation has been, and trust me, I can talk to you two for hours, believe me. But in this conversation, the time that we've had together, which to me this evening has been very special, I can say one thing that I've learned from both of you. And that is, not only do you give people a sense of hope, but one of the key messages I've picked up on or taken away from talking with you is that you give people a sense of assuredness in that their past and their bad choices and their bad circumstances don't define who they are in their true heart of hearts. And I have to commend you on that because a lot of people are still wallowing in that despair, thinking that's who they are because of so many instances, run-ins with the law, in and out of prison, and just think that that defines who they are. But you bring it to light in telling them and demonstrating to them, not just telling them, but in demonstrating to them that this does not have to define who you are. You're so much more capable. There's so much more potential and opportunity if you just look around that corner, you know? Mm-hmm. So I want to thank you both for that so much. And I want to thank you both for coming on the show and just talking with us, sharing some insights with the listeners, for the listeners. And gentlemen, let's please keep in touch. I want us to keep in touch. I truly mean that.
Definitely.
Thank you very, very much for having us. It's been a great, great experience. Enjoyed it.
I had a great time.
I'm glad you did, Tavares. I'm glad you did as well, John. Equally, I have, and we reciprocate. It's our honor and pleasure.
Yeah.
And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And hey, look, if you have a loved one, coworker, a friend, a neighbor, someone who just doesn't seem to be themselves, maybe they're going through dark days of despair, not quite sure where to turn or who to turn to, I humbly ask that you please share this show with them. Because on the road to rediscovery, we want our listeners to know two things. Number one, you're not alone. And two, there is always hope. The road to rediscovery, it's a movement, a revolution. And guess what? You are now part of it. We're all roadies on this journey of life. And it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.